gentlemen, to the War Room. Harrison Smith coming to you live this Wednesday evening, the 8th of April, 2026. I'm in a pretty good mood. I don't know about you. The so-called ceasefire has changed the landscape, changed the board just a little bit. How much it's actually changed, we'll get into here today. Obviously, at the very tail end of yesterday's broadcast, the news came in that Donald Trump, His Majesty Donald Trump, Master of Death, decided to stay his merciful hand, to stay his wrath, and to grant the people of Iran continued existence. So, all hail, the glorious Master of Death, Donald J. Trump, which is good, which is a good thing. I'm happy about this. I'm very happy that we didn't, quote unquote, eradicate a civilization never to recover yesterday. I'm very glad that Trump didn't go through with his utterly insane threat to annihilate an entire people group. So I'm happy about that. I also don't really believe any of it. I don't really trust any of what has come out. We'll get into it. I'll explain why. I also thought we'd take this time, this so-called ceasefire, this brief and perhaps at this point non-existent pause in the combat, to go back over the history of the Iran war, the long 39-day roller coaster ride that America and the world has been on. And I want to present that to you today. I'll probably do that in the third hour of today's show, because it's probably going to take an hour to go through, because I got a lot of videos just day by day showing you that we've been right the entire time. And that really what comes across when you look at the timeline from like a week before the attacks began on February 28th, starting around February 21st and moving forward, or going back farther, like what you see is that there has been absolutely no overarching plan. This entire debacle, this entire 39-day stretch of the war in Iran has been a series of attempted moves that completely flounder, totally fall flat, and then they change tactics to a different move. So the idea now being put forward that this was a great victory for Donald Trump and Iran buckled and, you know, succumbed to his ultimatum, it's just flagrantly untrue and has not been true any of the times they've kind of made this claim. And it really has been a Groundhog's Day repeat over and over and over of kind of the same thing. Trump saying he's going to kill everybody, then backing off a little bit. It's not actually all that complicated. But we will get into just the shifting goals of the war in Iran, the shifting methods by which to achieve that goal. Because really, again, I think if you look at it as we do, just taking the facts on the ground and being extremely skeptical, I guess I could say, of the official story, it's pretty obvious what is actually happening here. You know, things like trying to get the Kurds involved. It was not something that they had planned on doing beforehand. If you wanted to have the Kurds as your main fighting force on the ground, you would have made sure to establish that before you had to rely on them. They only asked the Kurds to get involved days after the initial strikes because the initial strikes didn't work. And so then they're scrambling and they try to get the Kurds and they say, the Kurds are going to be our ground force. And the Kurds say, F you, we did that to you last time and you abandoned us. We're not doing that. So they say, we don't need the Kurds. Screw the Kurds. The Kurds stole our guns. And then they move on to the next attempt. And what comes across, the impossible to avoid conclusion of all of this, is that Donald Trump has been flying by the seat of his pants, trying to project an air of control in what is in reality a completely chaotic mess of a war that was all started and then perpetuated at every step by our enemies in Israel, who we call our greatest allies. Every step of the way, from the buildup to the war in Iran, to the protest there in the beginning, convincing Trump to do it in the first place, to systematically eliminating any possibility or off ramps that we had for this entire process. And even now, it looks like they are screwing up this ceasefire because they don't like it. We're America. We shouldn't care what Israel likes. And that's sort of the whole problem, isn't it? We'll be right back.
What? what's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2026. I'll be joined in the next segment, actually, by Paul Danz. He is running to replace Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. And boy, does he have our endorsement. Really, almost anybody would. To be honest, you know, I would endorse a doorknob for Lindsey Graham. But luckily, we're not in that position. We actually have a very solid, good, you know, candidate who can actually win the election and is just not Lindsey Graham. But he's not just Lindsey Graham. He's not Lindsey Graham. And on his own, he's a great candidate. So very excited to talk to him and get into his view of everything going on. Of course, last night, towards the end of the show, the so-called ceasefire came in. And if you were watching, you saw my reaction. That was kind of like, I don't know. I don't think this is real. I don't think this is actually happening. And it basically didn't. It basically hasn't happened at all. And again, this was obvious from the moment that they announced it, because even in Trump's announcement about not following through with his genocidal threat to eradicate a civilization forever if they don't open the Strait of Hormuz, even in his announcement, it was like the Strait of Hormuz is still not open, and they agreed to a 10-point plan that is just everything Iran wants. And they didn't agree to the 10-point plan outright, but they agreed to it as a basis for negotiation, which means what actually happened is that Iran called Trump's bluff, and then Trump came up with an excuse to say otherwise. That's really what happened here. Again, this is not my bias speaking. Okay, I could do cover this in a way that is, you know, more, you know, lopsided one way or the other. I'm just telling you the facts. The facts are that Donald Trump told Iran, I will bomb you back to the Stone Age if you don't open the Strait of Hormuz. Iran did not open the Strait of Hormuz. And then Trump said, Iran capitulated. We're not doing the attack. But they didn't capitulate. The Strait of Hormuz is, at this moment, closed. And when it does reopen, perhaps in 2 weeks, perhaps longer, they'll be charging $2 million tolls for every ship going through the Strait, something that they didn't do 30 or 40 days ago before the war started. So as far as I can tell, it's not that Iran won the war necessarily. It's that the war is not over. And the ceasefire doesn't really exist. It was just a face-saving public relations announcement by Trump that means nothing, has changed nothing on the battlefield, but did allow him to declare victory despite the fact that he did chicken out. And again, this is another thing that people are like, yo, you're just mad that Trump didn't bomb Iran. You think that I'm mad that the thing I didn't want to happen didn't happen? That doesn't make any sense. I'm glad that Iran wasn't bombed. I'm still mad at the entire situation overall. I'm still mad that we're still in war with Iran. I'm mad that Israel is bombing the hell out of Lebanon. I'm mad that Trump is governing like an insane idiot and embarrassing all of us and threatening people with destruction. It's all bad. So I could spend the whole show today just like waging, you know, proxy war on X, trying to debate the Benny Johnsons of the world who are telling us this was a fantastic victory and everybody who was upset at the Iran war is a panican who should never be trusted. I'm not going to do that, obviously. That's what X is for. But I will present some metaphors. How about I present a few metaphors? And as a father, I always find myself just thinking about my relationship with the government, kind of like my relationship with my children, since ostensibly we are in charge of our government. It is ours. And in that case, I've had people say to me, why aren't you celebrating the fact that there's a ceasefire? Okay, one, it's not really a ceasefire. It doesn't really exist. Two, let's say my five-year-old son walks into my living room dragging the garden hose and starts spraying the garden hose all over the living room. Now, at a certain point, I may be able to negotiate with him and get him to stop doing that. I don't then celebrate the fact that he stopped, right? Everything is still wet. It's still bad. This still wasn't something that he should have done. I'm happy he's not spraying the water still, but I don't then celebrate. Great job turning off that water, kid. You did it. Go get some ice cream. Like, no, it's still a problem. We still have a mess to clean up. Actually, this was literally an ex conversation I had. And I can't remember what the guy's response was, but this basically is the metaphor. It's like, oh yeah, no, the guy's like, well, but what if your living room was really dirty beforehand and he brought in the hose to clean it up? And it's like, yeah, that's a great point, man. It's like the living room was messy and now it's still messy, but also flooded. That's essentially the situation that we're in. Iran is still a threat. Iran is still there. It still has its uranium. It's still blocking the Strait of Hormuz. It still has not just everything it did have before the war started. It has more than it had before the war started. This is not a cause for celebration. Again, I'm relieved. I'm happy. I'm very, very gratified that President Trump decided not to eradicate a civilization. Thank you, glorious God of death, Donald Trump, for staying your wrath and showing mercy to us mere mortals. But it's still a bad thing. The other, a metaphor I can draw for you that shows just how absurd this argumentation that you're seeing on Twitter is. Again, I have people saying, you're just mad that Trump didn't attack. Because I was saying how bad it would be for Trump to attack. I was saying this would be horrible. This would be devastating, genocidal. And then when it didn't happen, people think I'm mad about it. Like I got my ego hurt. I'm like, dang it, I wish he did attack. Then I'd be right. I said, I didn't know if he was... Actually, I said at the beginning of the show yesterday, before anything had happened, I said, I think he's probably going to back down. I don't think he's going to actually attack. I think he's going to come up with an excuse, which is exactly what happened. So I was right after all. It's like I've been right about this the entire time. You can go back and watch the shows for yourself. It's a beautiful thing about the internet. Go watch my show from the day before we attacked Iran. I got things right that people to this day still haven't figured out. I did it before we even launched the attack. It's fine. It's not about that. It's about the absurdity of these arguments. It's about how you have absolutely nothing to actually go on. And so you come up with these insane claims like you're just mad Trump didn't attack Iran because it proves that you were wrong. It's like, again, to take my kids as a metaphor, it'd be like if I looked up one day and I see my five-year-old son pointing a loaded handgun at my three-year-old daughter, but there's an apple on her head and he's like aiming to shoot the apple. And I'm like, no, don't do it. And then he fires and hits the apple off her head. And he's like, see, what were you so worried about, you panican? It's like, okay, that could have gone really bad and I'm still angry. And then it'd be like coming to me, still angry. My son is firing bullets at his sister. And saying to me, you're just mad that he didn't shoot his sister. You were so sure. You thought you were so smart. You thought for sure he was going to accidentally shoot his sister in the head. But he didn't. And that makes you mad. Like, okay. All right, fine. If that's what you want to believe, more power to you. Operation Epic Failure. 13,000 Iranian targets struck. 155 Iranian ships destroyed. 90% of Iran's weapon factory stuck. Struck 80% of Iran's nuclear industrial base struck 0% of military goals achieved. Well done. Thousands killed, zero change in geopolitics. I mean, there have been changes. It's just all negative for us. I'll lay it out for you. We'll get into all of it. Let's go back in time and begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch, shall we? All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2026. U.S., Iran, and Israel agree to ceasefire. The United States and Iran reached an 11th-hour ceasefire deal on Tuesday evening, hours after President Trump threatened to start wiping out Iran's, quote, whole civilization if it did not allow commercial shipping to pass safely through the Strait of Hormuz. Mr. Trump announced the agreement in a post on social media hours after Pakistan, a mediator in the dispute, urged him to stand down from the 8 p.m. Eastern time deadline he'd set for Iran to accede to his demands. Pakistan proposed that each side observe a two-week ceasefire, and during that time, Iran allow oil, gas, and other vessels to proceed unmolested through the economically vital waterway. Shortly after the ceasefire agreement, a U.S. official said American military strikes against Iran had stopped. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said in a statement that the Iranians would cease their defensive operation and that for a period of 2 weeks, safe passage to the Strait of Hormuz will be possible if coordinated with Iran's military. That has all changed. This article is from about 2 hours ago, and it's entirely different now. The Strait of Hormuz is closed as a response to Israel not just continuing to bomb at Lebanon, but actually bombing Lebanon to the biggest degree that they ever have before. We'll get into all of it. And I'll read you the 10-point plan here in just a second that we apparently agreed to, but now we're saying we never agreed to it because it was always just the thing used as an excuse to say, oh, look, we're having a ceasefire. Actually, I totally didn't bluff and get called on it. They gave up. They wanted a ceasefire because they're so scared of us. Like, yeah, right. U.S., Israel insist Iran ceasefire does not apply to Lebanon, which suffers huge airstrikes. Israel has made clear it doesn't see the newly declared U.S.-Iran ceasefire as applying to its war in Lebanon, where it is still trying to destroy Hezbollah. The White House, too, has made its stance clear that it doesn't apply, but President Trump has stated his intent to take care of a Lebanon ceasefire separately. But this is the thing. It's not actually up to them. It's up to Iran. If they want the ceasefire, then they have to accede to Iran's demands. Iran is the one making demands right now because we are the ones who want something from them that they're not giving us. So if we want the Strait of Hormuz to be open, we have to stop Israel from bombing Lebanon. Again, I'll show you videos from Joe Kent as he has issued a video following this so-called ceasefire, reiterating what he said in his resignation letter, that we have to decouple, we have to restrain Israel. Now might be the time, and it might come about as a necessity, because literally we want to stop the war. Apparently Trump wants to start the war. J.D. Vance wants to stop the war. And we can't as long as Israel is still bombing Lebanon. So we're almost being forced to have to try to restrain or use leverage against Israel in one way or another. We'll see how that goes. Mystery surrounds death of ninth scientist tied to U.S. secrets as disturbing pattern grows. This is from Daily Mail. As another scientist with ties to America's space program has now joined the growing list of deaths and disappearances around the U.S., Michael David Hicks, a research scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, passed away on July 30th, 2023, at the age of 59, but the cause of death was never made public and no record of an autopsy being performed could be found. This, of course, is just the ninth in a long series of mysterious deaths and disappearances of energy, spaceflight, and national security-related scientists here in America. Finally, we have this. Forget 65. America's new retirement age is 85, or 35 if you're lucky. Now, interesting about this is that the average age of death in America is 79. So the average retirement age is now a full 6 years older than the average age of death, meaning that most people simply work until they die here in America, here in the greatest country the world has ever seen, the greatest empire, the wealthiest, most prosperous nation ever on earth in history by a factor of 10, our people are working until they die. They're working until they're 85. They work from ostensibly 18 to 85, and they never get to relax, never get to truly disconnect and enjoy your life. We actually had a pretty good setup a little while ago. Go back in time about 50, 60 years. everything kind of made a hell of a lot of sense, right? You could get a job. You didn't even have to. Yeah, and Ben Shapiro's thrilled about this. You should never stop working. Of course, that's easy for him to say, probably him and all of his family and friends. You should be working till you're 85, he says, sitting in an air-conditioned room at a desk saying lies. When your job is to sit in front of camera and lie for Israel, it's not actually that hard for you to keep working until you're 85. Tell that to literally anybody else that has to actually work for a living. So very easy for Ben Shapiro and others like him to say. But for the average person, I think we'd prefer to go back to the way it was before, where you got out of high school, you could get a job at a factory in town, you could work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and afford two cars, your own house, your wife staying at home to raise the kids, and you retired at 65 and spent 15, 20 years just enjoying yourself. That was a life that has been stolen from us, that has been deliberately ripped away from us and replaced with just nothing but negative. It's not like, you know, we discovered a better way of doing things, and so we chose to do things differently. We were forced by necessity into a much less meaningful or fulfilling or appropriate way of living. And of course, we could all probably retire at 30 if we stopped giving money to everybody who hates us. We stopped letting ourselves be robbed to the nth degree by a bunch of government programs to simply redistribute our wealth to genocidal maniacs in the Middle East or newly arrived con men from Somalia here in America. If we could manage to actually benefit from our incredible prosperity, we wouldn't have to look with envy at the incredible architectural creations in China or Abu Dhabi. We could have them here. We wouldn't have to, you know, wonder if it's safe sending our kids to elementary school. We wouldn't have to, you know, avoid certain parts of town because the police don't go there. We could have everything. We could be living in paradise, but we've allowed ourselves to be taken over by a bunch of rapacious parasites who would rather drink our blood. Now, let's get into what exactly happened with Iran yesterday. Again, I think looking at this just with a bird's eye view and in an unbiased sort of way, it's kind of obvious from the beginning, but now, a couple, you know, 24 hours later, we can look back and say with certainty that, yeah, basically, and we'll go through this because I'm going to be joined by Paul Danz in the next segment. I think I'm going to have Lebanon John call in, talk about what's going on in Lebanon in the second hour. We'll spend 30 minutes or so with him. And then I want to get into the timeline of the Iran war, just going back to the week before February 28th, the buildup and how this has unfolded. And one of the patterns that you see emerge is that clearly Iran and America try to do, or I'm sorry, Israel and America try to do something, you know, spectacular. Then it fails. Then Donald Trump comes out with an ultimatum and says, you have 48 hours or we're going to kill everybody. And then those 48 hours go by and Donald Trump comes out and says, it's fine. I don't need to do my threat. I don't need to go through with it because we totally have a ceasefire and an agreement. And then Iran comes out and says, we do not have a ceasefire or an agreement. And then we just go back into this cycle. And then they come up with a new thing. So it's like they tried to get the Kurds involved. Kurds not involved. Oh, ultimatum. We'll destroy all your electricity if you don't do something right now. And then 48 hours later, it kind of falls to the side. I think this is what we've been witnessing ever since last Friday. I don't think there was ever a lost pilot. I think we tried in sort of a last-ditch effort. Because all Trump is looking for and all he's been looking for since about 48 hours after this war started, the entire everything Trump has been doing and everything America's been doing has been focused on getting a win, just getting one win. If we could just get the uranium, then we could declare victory. If we could just find somebody in the Iranian leadership that we could claim, oh, he's the friendly guy that we put in charge now. So we did it. We regime change. A good regime's in place now. We'll back off. Like, they just want something that they can hold up as a trophy to say, see, this is what it was all about. And now we're done. That last Friday was the uranium in the Isfahan nuclear plant. I think that the C-130s and the fighter jets and the Black Hawk helicopters, I think that was an attempt to extract the uranium. That was their big, like, dramatic thing that they, if that had succeeded, then the war would probably be over right now. They'd be able to say, we did it. We got the uranium. That was the victory condition. We've won. Now we can back off. It didn't work, obviously. It did not succeed. So they came up with a story about a, you know, lost pilot and told everybody it was an amazing, you know, Hollywood-esque rescue mission. And then immediately after that, he issues the 48-hour ultimatum, just like he did the other times that their grand, dramatic, you know, frantic attempt to rescue this disaster fails. Then he issues an ultimatum, and it sort of resets the news cycle. I mean, he has done this over and over again. And if you can't see the pattern, then you're just not looking for it. I'll get more into that full breakdown later. I want to go to clip number 11 now. This is Joe Kent, who released a video following this ceasefire deal about what has to come next, what the next step for America is if we want lasting peace in the region. Let's watch.
Great news this evening that there's been a two-week ceasefire agreed upon tentatively between us and the Iranians. It's unconfirmed yet if the Iranians have accepted this deal as well, but I hope that they have. It's absolutely essential that we ensure that the Israelis do not sabotage this two-week ceasefire or eventually the lasting peace that we're trying to achieve with the Iranians. We're on the cusp of being able to have the Strait of Hormuz reopened to hopefully start to get the world energy supply and commerce back online. The last thing we need is the Israelis doing what they have done in past negotiations and targeting the negotiators or taking a series of strikes that escalates the conflict. In order to ensure that we can restrain the Israelis, we actually have to start removing features of the military support that we give to them. We have to take away enough from them that they simply cannot go on the offense, that they're using all their military capabilities that we provide for them and that they have organically for the defense of their country and not for offensive operations inside of Iran. It's absolutely critical that we take this step and don't just take Israel's word for it, that they agree to this ceasefire simply because they have a very bad track record of adhering to these deals. We also have to keep in mind that Israel has a different strategic outcome than we do. Us working towards any kind of a deal with the Iranian government works against the Israeli strategic objectives of toppling this government completely and totally. We have to recognize that in order to properly address Israel, because Israel could spoil any peace that President Trump is working to achieve. So we have to keep that in mind. It's very good news we took this ceasefire. We have to understand that there is no military solution to the conflict right now. Basically, every action militarily that we've taken has only strengthened the regime, and it's done a lot to destabilize the entire region and to take away the security and safety of the free commerce of all of the energy and oil and natural gas that flows out of the region through the Strait of Hormuz. So we have to keep our main objective in mind. It's getting that lasting peace, and we will be the more powerful nation for providing that lasting peace and stability. We will not gain a more powerful position by continuing to escalate the conflict or continuing to strike Iran. In order for us to achieve this goal that we have of bringing about a lasting peace, keeping the Strait of Hormuz open, we have to restrain the Israelis. We have to keep that in mind. So I continue to pray for peace, pray for President Trump, pray for him to have clarity, pray for successful peace negotiations, pray for our men and women downrange in harm's way. Thank you. God bless.
So there's Joe Kent again laying out there is no military solution to this intractable problem. J.D. Vance has issued a statement on this. We'll go to that in the next hour. But Paul Danz joins me in about 4 minutes after this commercial break. Share this link. You're not going to want to miss this. This is the man who will defeat Lindsey Graham. Stay with us.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these Embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. How to put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on it since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishealthcare.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishealthcare.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishealthcare.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishealthcare.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be joined by my guest, Paul Danz. He's an accomplished attorney, former Trump administration official, and the driving force behind Project 2025. He's now running for U.S. Senate in South Carolina to unseat Lindsey Graham. You can follow Paul Danz on X at Danz for Senate, pauldanz.com. He's also on Facebook, Paul Danz for U.S. Senate. That's his YouTube channel as well. And he's on Truth at Paul Danz for U.S. Senate, all spelled out. Mr. Danz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Harrison. Great to be with you.
Well, the pleasure is mine, and of course, you are running in probably one of the most important races in America right now. Just let's start off with the pitch. Why choose you over, beloved patriot Lindsey Graham?
Let's stop World War III. Let's get this Senate seat, rip it out of the hands of the deep state, and put it back in the hands of the people. Look, I'm a guy who, pure-blooded deplorable, if you will, one of the many of us who came from the working class stock. And when, my family went off and fought these wars only to see us degraded, the whole globalization. I'm fighting to get America back, to make South Carolina first again, get it out of the hands of this globalist warmonger, this childless weirdo, and really start building for a 21st century healthy South Carolina.
Well, and I hope the sarcasm came across, because it's hard to believe that somebody like Lindsey Graham actually represents the great state of South Carolina. How has Lindsey Graham maintained such a position in the U.S. Senate? How has he retained his seat for so long when he seems to be on the wrong side of just about every topic from the point of view of a Republican, you know, conservative like myself? How has he managed to retain hold on this seat, and how do you plan to break that hold?
Right. He is the uniparty senator from Ukraine, maybe slash Israel. Yeah. I'm running to be the Republican senator from South Carolina. How's he held on to power? Look, the guy's been there 32 years, and he is essentially blackmailed. I think that at the end of the day, many of the people in Washington are corrupted, and this is maybe the worst of them. But there's a basically...
I'm sorry, we're you're breaking up a little bit there. Sorry, we lost your Zoom crew. If you can tell me if we're reconnected, make sure we have him on so I can ask him next. All right, yeah, we lost you there for just a second. But yeah, he's had this stranglehold. And I don't want to spend too much time on the Iran war. I want to get to your domestic policies, but obviously Lindsey Graham is a major war hawk. That's what a lot of people like myself don't like about him, amongst other things. But that's, you know, one of the primary objections we have. What is your opinion on the Iran war, the direction that it's going, and importantly, Lindsey Graham's, you know, encouragement of this and you know, cheering for this for his entire career?
Well, I was never a fan of this war. I did not vote for Mark Levin to be president of the United States. I believe this entire thing was engendered by bad people around President Trump. Look, we elected him to be the commander in chief. And the reality is that we have major battles here to fight at home. I mean, China, the more we stretch ourselves out around the world, the more susceptible we come here at home. And, you know, that's really the case. Look at the farmland, for example. There's 44,000 acres in South Carolina owned beneficially by the communist Chinese. So let's focus on home and let's stop running around with these endless foreign wars. That's certainly why we put Donald Trump back in for four more years.
Well, that's exactly right. And that explains a lot of the disappointment and feeling of betrayal that a lot of us on the MAGA side of things feel. And Lindsey Graham has been, you know, a big part of that. And again, it's like, it's not even that I care that much about what's going on in the Middle East. It's that I see us focusing on that while at home. The story today: America's new retirement age is 85, even though the average age of death in America is 79. How is our retirement age 6 years older than our average age of death? It means we're working people to death. I mean, how do we solve these problems? How do we solve these intractable, long-running societal ills that are going totally unaddressed by the current slate of Republicans?
Yeah, that's right. When Lindsey Graham went to Washington, the debt was $5 trillion. Now it's $39 trillion. These endless wars, we plundered all of our riches, the ability to have actually a great life here at home and people retiring on time. We have to grow the economy, but we have to build back by investing in ourselves. No more $300 billion to Ukraine and another $50 billion. No, we're going to put it back to work here at home in the public schools, building the roads back in South Carolina, giving our kids a shot at this 21st century economy after AI, tech schools. I want shop class back in every middle school in South Carolina. They don't even teach kids to work with their hands anymore. So we're going to build the next generation of electricians, of advanced robotic technicians. We're going to do that in a way that gives people a chance of the future. And we're also going to really build a 21st century agricultural economy in South Carolina. That's going to be done. I'm proposing a 21st century homesteading act to put our next generation back on the land.
That's a very interesting idea. I'd like to hear more about that. But overall, how do you think we can get this done? Because myself, I'm one of them. I know a lot of people out there have been so disappointed by Trump and so disappointed by the current class of Republicans. You can blame everything on Trump, but I mean, the Republicans are right there. They haven't passed anything that we want them to pass. They've not done the SAVE Act. I mean, they haven't achieved anything for us. And so a lot of people are looking around and going, I'm not going to vote for the Republicans anymore. They keep lying to me. Now, I've said, you know, I think the right person comes along, I'm happy to vote Republican, but I understand people feeling betrayed at this point. What do you say to people who think that voting is no longer even a viable option for saving this country?
Well, I'm here to break the system. This is the only way we can do it right now in the current constructs of Republican and Democrat. But I'm not your country club of Republican. I'm a guy who's America first and found his way believing in Trump that he was going to do these things. But we have to go for the next generation of fighter. And I'm a proven one. Look, we can do it. Look, everyone listening to this, you got to support people like me out here fighting. So you can go to pauldance.com. But the most important thing is the youth have to vote. Right. I'm standing up for this next generation, and people are saying, well, they don't vote, but they can vote right now. And that's the important thing. June 9th, Lindsey Graham is in major trouble. This is a jungle primary, and the top two people will advance. So he is at 41%, and there's all likelihood going to be a runoff. But right now, it's important that we get the messaging out there. Look, I'm here to really break the system and put us back in control of the U.S. Senate.
That's absolutely what we need, because even if Republicans win, the American people need representation that right now is totally lacking. So June 9th is the primary day. How can people contribute to you? How can people vote early? Like, for people in South Carolina that want to vote for you, or people around the country that want to see Lindsey Graham kicked out on his butt, how can they help and how can they vote for you?
Yeah, well, look, it's pauldans.com. You can follow us at Dans for Senate. But what I'm really proposing is to break the system. Like, we got to bring the Sacklers in for justice, the opioid crisis. I want to string up, Fauci. He's a criminal. And this is what I'm going to go after. So this is not just for South Carolina. This is for all the patriots across the land. So all hands have to be on deck to get this done. But we're in a position now where we can win this. There are 62 days to this election. And, you know, go and donate. Chip in $20. This is an investment in your future. You're already paying for it at the gas pump. Every time you fill up now, it's another $20-$35. Chip in $20 for my campaign. We're going to take Lindsey out. We're going to focus on our country once again.
Absolutely. And again, you know, there's a lot of good people running around the country right now, but not all of them have your experience and your expertise, your wealth of knowledge and cursus honorum, right? The path you've taken to get here is very impressive. And just to let people know, you were a graduate of MIT with degrees in economics and city planning. You went to the University of Virginia School of Law, built a successful commercial litigation practice in New York City. Sounds like you're doing pretty well for yourself. You really want to give all that up to go hang out with the weirdos in DC, Paul?
Well, I gave it up actually 10 years ago. Look, this is about survival of our republic. There's been a white genocide, okay? Yeah. There has been a systematic ability to not only take down our republic from without, you know, the borders, but also within. The Chinese communists have come in, bought our land. Meanwhile, people are being poisoned. So I'm going to stop this. I'm going to be the guy who gets us the answers in Washington, who puts these people on the hot seat. But more than that, puts money back in the pockets of American families. I'm a dad of five, and I have a stake in the future. No more of this fake and gay stuff, you know, to have a weirdo wandering around Disney World and calling for nuclear annihilation in Iran. This is just absurd. So we have to start back with putting people who are living family value lives. And that's what I struggle and I live up to every day as you know, a Christian believer, but who someone who benefited greatly from all the shared sacrifice of 250 years of generations. This is the point where patriots have to stand up. So I'm asking the folks out there, go to pauldans.com, get behind our campaign, but get the word out too. This is an information war. It's a catchy title. We can't trust what's coming out of Washington right now. But when you get Paul Dans in the Senate, you will get to the bottom of this stuff. I'm going to release the Kennedy papers, the last 10,000 docs. I'm going to get to the bottom of the UAPs. I'm going to get you Fauci on the silver platter, because this is what we have to do. Otherwise, this whole country is crumbling. And it's gone on too long. This is really the 11th hour.
It really is. And when you bring up people like Fauci, or I would throw in anybody in the Russiagate collusion, it's like we've got a backlog of justice to achieve, justice to dispense. And every day it seems like we're adding more names. It's like we got a lot of work ahead of us. And all of this is is very serious, but if we can just take a moment, you brought it up. What was he doing at Disney World? Do you have any idea? I mean, you got any sources? What the heck Lindsey Graham is doing? Lone man, no children, wandering around Disney World with a fairy wand. I mean, what's he up to, Paul?
I'm a dad of five. I have four daughters. You know, my eldest is 12. They've actually outgrown their Disney princess phase. So when this is the U.S. Center, it's in your face, I think. I mean, Alex and you all would probably have better theories about what's going on. But at this point, he's untouchable. To do something like that is just kind of showing that there's impunity. Look, they're kind of, you know, out there celebrating a globalist touchdown. And what do you do when you've cooked up another endless war in the Middle East? You go and celebrate at Disney World.
It's his Super Bowl.
I mean, look, it is the neocon Super Bowl. Yeah. And but, you know, thank God that there's people, you know, like Alex, like Tucker, this entire kind of right-thinking right that is beginning to stand up and say, no mas, we're not doing this anymore. And, yeah. You know, for those of us on the ground, I've committed to it. I was, one of President Trump's killers in the first term. That's where I got to where I was, because I used my MIT problem solving with my Virginia law acumen and just kind of this hard-headed, uncuckable, right, is the phrase. Like, I do not bend, and I stick with the principles. And that's what Project 2025 was intended to be. It was a plan to make sure the next time we got power, we were ready to use it, and basically getting the entire conservative right to ready roll day one. And I think President Trump has used it, but the reality is there's bad people who make their way into the system, and the Patriots are outnumbered right now on the field.
Absolutely.
Particularly the U.S. Senate.
Yep. And again, it's like, you know, sure, they do some things that maybe aren't for American interests. I wouldn't care that much if things were great here at home. If we were, you know, living large and not having to work, sure, go to war overseas. What is it? You know, go kidnap the president of Venezuela. Sounds fun. But it's like we've got these massive existential problems here that are going totally unaddressed. Project 2025 was a really brilliant blueprint for saving this country. That was actually going to be my next question. How would you grade, the Trump administration's second term on how they've employed 2025? What do you think it's going to take to get us back on track?
Well, if it was a NASCAR race, I'd say right now they're kind of in the back part of the field. We still have a lot of laps to go, but it's time to get real here. Mm. Look, I think it was a great plan out of the gate, and it gave people directional. I salute President Trump and his team for going the right direction, but it can't just be performative. We have to nail these things down. We've lost a lot of time on the clock with Pam Bondi and the like. So let's get the orange jumpsuits going. You know, let's actually see some justice. But more than that, you know, look, this is going to snap back twice as hard if we're not serious. The Democrats are coming hard. We know that. I, as a guy who was under the gun there when they had control of the House, it's very difficult to get anything done. So that makes it particularly acute. Look, in South Carolina, we have the worst roads in the country. Our schools are falling apart. And we have a senator who is there committing, wants to go home only to bring boys and girls to go fight on foreign battlefields. That's the only reason he comes back to South Carolina. And, you know, meanwhile, we suffer these indignities. What we see this past Easter, with them shutting out the patriarch from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, these are things we just can't stand for anymore. So there comes a time where you either stand and deliver or you just give up. And we have to fight. This is what our relatives, our ancestors did. We have no other choice.
Absolutely. And again, you see Lindsey Graham make some of these statements that he's made where he said, like, verbatim, he's been like, yeah, I'm going to send South Carolinians to go die for Israel. And it's like, how does anybody fall for this? And clearly it's because he's got the approval of the establishment. He's got the approval of the Uniparty. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, but it's about breaking that and showing that we can break that. And what I don't understand is, as you point out, Democrats are open about what they plan. They plan to arrest people who collaborated with Trump. So what I don't understand is, okay, if you're Lindsey Graham or any of these other rhinos, sure, you might look at Harrison Smith, some dude from Texas, and say, who cares what he thinks? But do they not care about preserving their own life, preserving their own legacy? I mean, do they not understand what the Democrats are planning for them? And how can I make an argument better than just showing a video of Keith Ellison or you know, J.B. Pritzker saying we're throwing them all in prison. It's like, how do they not get the severity of the situation we're in, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think, you know, God bless us, 250 years from now, when we still have the American Republic, they're going to use the name Lindsey Graham like they used the name Benedict Arnold. The man is a traitor against this great republic. And you see that J6, this man, this lunatic, was walking around telling the Capitol Police they should have shot more J6 protesters in the head. Yeah. That's why they had the guns. This is the first guy to cut bait on Trump and say, you know, I'm out, count me out. So I guess he's planning to skate away from this. But we've all seen this act one too many times. And that's South Carolina is finally enough. But, you know, he has managed with the, you know, the trillions that flow through the federal government to get a really hook on a lot of people. And that's why it's really incumbent that we stand up as American patriots, individuals. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. Without that, we don't have the First Amendment. And the First Amendment is what this very show is based on. They tried to pull the plug on Alex. They tried to pull the plug on everybody else. They are going to set themselves on deplatforming us, basically taking, debanking us, taking our free speech away, taking our guns away. This is what's coming, folks. I know they say this is the truth of every next election, but this one is particularly, if we give Lindsey Graham another 6 years in the U.S. Senate, he will lead us off a cliff. And he's just dead set on kinetic war. You know, there's a whole group of them that are kind of committed to, I don't know, rebuilding the Third Temple. Well, look, the Third Temple was rebuilt. It's called Jesus Christ, right? Our Lord and Savior. And, you know, he tore down the temple and rebuilt it in 3 days. And that's my theology. So as far as making this into a religious war, no, the religious war is living good here at home. It's like getting rid of the enemies, the snakes within us, casting them out from the U.S. borders, and actually making this the new Jerusalem, the land of milk and honey.
You're exactly right. And of course, you know the response you'll get to things like that, because I get it too. I've been talking about the red heifer sacrifice and the Third Temple forever, because they talk about it. And so the response I get from people online is they go, sure, you're rambling about this crazy temple stuff. It's like, I don't know, Benjamin Netanyahu is saying it. Well, I'm supposed to just ignore it? So it's this weird dichotomy where, because we think it's weird and go, we don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to go to war to start some apocalyptic, you know, like eschatological. I don't know any of this stuff. I don't like it. And it shouldn't be deciding our war agenda. Are you kidding me? And then people turn around and go, wow, you're crazy for thinking that. No, they're the crazy ones for trying to actually start a war over this. And people need to be aware of it and speak out against it. I feel the same way. You mentioned white genocide. Why are people afraid of saying this? Why are people afraid of saying, hey, it's wrong to deliberately eradicate a race? Everybody agrees with this, but we're not allowed to say it because we're white and white people are being targeted. I mean, how do we break through people's own like self-imposed fear of talking about this stuff that's very real?
Well, the phrase is courage begets courage. You know, it takes a few strong men to stand up and people get in line and find their own sea legs. And that's what I'm doing. You know, it's just intuitive. I grew up on the shoulders of giants, these men in my family. My grandfather was a merchant marine. He sailed in the Murmansk run, probably the deadliest convoy, you know, in those Liberty ships. They were sitting ducks, essentially. But, you know, these were the kind of the role models I came up with. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let this country go down and hand it over to this kind of communist clown, globalist elite. But look, I've been at the top. I've swum with those sharks, and I know how to speak their language. I know their game plan. I've fought them at the top levels of corporate law in the Chevron Ecuador case, and they can be beat. That's the bottom line. You know, we have right on our side. We have God on our side, and we actually have the majority of Americans on our side. It's about getting out of your armchair, getting a little bit uncomfortable, saying things that are basically going to say, yeah, you know, he's actually right when he says that. And that's what it's incumbent on all of us to do.
And it really is powerful, isn't it? Because when you look at somebody like Lindsey Graham, or you look at any of these organizations, the ADL, whatever, you know, they'll brag about, we have hundreds of people on our payroll working 24/7 to look after this stuff. And yet, really, if you look at the polls, I mean, today there's a poll for the first time maybe ever America's views of Israel have gone negative. And this is because we have truth on our side. We don't have all of the money or all of the systems or all of the establishment, you know, levers to pull. But it turns out you don't need anything if you have the truth. The truth alone sort of overpowers all of that stuff, all of the money and all of the endorsements. And the truth really is the secret weapon at the end of the day, isn't it?
Well, Jesus is the truth, the way, and the light. So he will overcome anything. I think that we have to realize that we're in this information war. But again, you know, they do have the high ground right now, but we can take it back. We did that. They had us locked down, counted out basically during COVID, and we fought our way out of it. Yeah. And this is what we've done as a country for 200 years. But you just have to start with what's around you and just kind of build out from there. But it's really incumbent, you know, again, this isn't South Carolina's problem. Lindsey Graham's America's problem. This is a guy who basically rules the roost in the Senate for the Democrats. He is a uniparty elite. He's the reason we don't have the SAVE Act. He's doing all this performative stuff like he's actually for it. They're just completely kind of trying to swindle the kind of Fox News watching crowd that, you know, wants to believe. Look, we all want to believe there's people in Washington working in our best interest, but they're demons out there, folks. And this is a spiritual war. So if you're going to send, I'm putting on the battle. I was given the name Paul and a calling essentially to do this work. And that's why I will be bold and get out there. And I'm asking you to put your faith in me and support us.
Well, I wish I lived in South Carolina and could vote for you. All I can do is endorse you and try to encourage all freedom lovers there in the great state of South Carolina to vote for Paul Dans. You can follow Mr. Dans at Dans for Senate on X, pauldans.com. You can find him on Facebook or YouTube at Paul Dans for U.S. Senate, and he's on Truth at Paul Dans for U.S. Senate. But there he is on X at Dans for Senate. Thank you so much for coming on with us, sir. We'd love to get an update from you prior to the June 9th primary, just to get you over the finish line. And we're watching your race with bated breath, hoping against hope that you can kick out despicable warmonger Lindsey Graham.
It's going to happen. Keep the faith. Great to be with you, Harrison.
Thank you so much. All right. Paul Dans, everybody. Dans for Senate on X. PaulDans.com. On Facebook, Paul Dans for U.S. Senate. And again, Lindsey Graham. If there's one swamp creature that we want to, I'll be nice, get out of the swamp. I'll just say we want to get him out of the swamp, is how I'll put it. Lindsey Graham's the guy, and Paul Dans is the man for the hour. Now, when we get back on the other side, we'll be joined by Lebanon John. He is just been in contact with people from Iran, and we'll get you an on-the-ground report.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, for $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First tactical trench knife. It's badass. America First t-shirt, MKUltra atomic defense supplements, Shilajit gummy, Shilajit capsules, Irish CMOS capsules, Warcry premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to be shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down once we can't do it. We have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass. And it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.